back after the legislative session, we bring in new faces all the time.
We're going to open our committee hearings, Senate Education Committee on Education, today, February 8th. Sorry for a little late. We've got a lot of stuff happening, and we've only got two meetings left to do it all. So,
can we go home after that?
No, then we have all the stuff coming from the House, both bills.
Both of them?
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1540. So we'll have a short explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1540 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to conduct an evaluation of providing a tuition waiver for students at community colleges and public universities who are pursuing math-related degrees. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which clarify what the heck is and is not allowed to do. The bill has an existing, sometimes we do this, existing
it
subsequent
just sounds
referral
funny when you say, what the heck?
To the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. The Dash 1 amendments have a minimal fiscal impact, and so the Joint Committee on Ways and Means has said that it does not actually have to go down to their committee. It can proceed directly to the floor if the Dash 1s are adopted.
Richard, did you catch the way that came out? What the heck they are supposed to do?
Thank you, Senator Gelser. I do now.
So with that, I would...
Yes. Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1540 as amended to the floor.
We haven't amended it.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated February 4th. 2016.
Senator Haas moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated February 4th, 2016. Is there any discussion? Do you want to do a little explanation of what the amendment does?
Well, the amendment does just what you said. It clarifies it. Remember, we're not doing this. We're just looking at whether this is feasible to add a tuition waiver for math majors in Oregon as part of a way to further give access to kids to go to college, further to brand our universities as a place where academics are serious, and further as to take into consideration what many of the tech companies and engineers in Washington County have supported as a place of focus for our young people.
Question?
Yes. Discussion.
Discussion. Thank you.
Senator Parrish.
Do we know how HEC is going to arrive at this evaluation? Are they going to get outside placeholders, Senator Haas?
I have every confidence in the staff at HEC. I could give you two scenarios. I think we talked about this last week. One was the work they did on the Oregon Promise and the viability of that and how you would structure it. And that was very helpful as we got into last session and ultimately passed that. The other was the work they did on what seemed like a very alluring title of Pay It Forward. And when they got done with their evaluation of that, they said, you know, it's just not there. So I think that's the spirit I'm bringing this to. It may not be there.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? We are ready. Okay, so we will take, is there any further discussion? There is none. Is there any, on adopting the amendment, is there any disagreement with adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Senator Haas.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1540 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And the bill that was referred to Joint Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay. Senator Haas moves that Senate Bill 1540 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
Two things, if I could, Ms. Chair. First off, you would request that the subsequent referral be rescinded because it's still the President's choice as to what to do.
Correct.
Okay. Number one. Number two, I guess I want to say for the record, when HEC is doing this work, if they find a nexus with some of the other hard sciences, that would be good to know as well.
Good point. Any other conversation, discussion? Seeing none, we'll take, is there any disagreement with having this bill, the Ways and Means rescinded, and the bill itself to move to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Everybody okay with that? Okay, so It passes. Senator Hess, you want to go?
Be happy to. Thank you.
Do you know anything about the one?
I don't know what it
is. Next one is we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1540. We'll open a work session on 1558, and we have some amendments with that as well. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1558 prohibits disclosure of records by universities or by college or university student health centers, mental health centers, or counseling centers. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 2 amendments, which modify the introduced language to correctly ensure that the health records are appropriate and they're properly targeted. The measure does not contain a fiscal or revenue impact.
With that.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated February 2nd, 2016.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated February 2nd, 2016. Is there any discussion? Sarah, do you want to say anything about the amendments?
I just want to thank those that work on the amendments. A lot of people worked really hard last weekend. Debbie Koreski, Becca Goes from the University of Oregon, their general counsel, and I believe almost every general counsel of pretty much every institution in the state of Oregon, public and private, and community colleges read through these to make sure it worked. So I'm very grateful to everyone for working on that.
So with that,
and extra.
Any further discussion? If not, is there any opposition to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is passed. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1558 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 1558 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just another for the record sort of thing. The confusion we have with HIPAA and FERPA and all that is more than interesting. I think it might be beneficial at some point to find out if we have other sorts of glitches in the system, in the K-12 system as well, that might need to be addressed.
Since I didn't say Senator Cruz, that was Senator Cruz. Any other discussion? I understand, yeah. I mean, there are lots of issues when it comes to...
Huh? I'm looking at the department right back there. So
no further discussion. Should we call the roll? We haven't called. No, we'll just go fast. Is there any opposition to we've already done the amendment. We've already had the next bill. So is there any opposition? Seeing none, bill passes. Senator Gelser, would love to carry. Very good. Thank you, Senator Gelser.
High school principals tend to get confused a lot.
Exactly. We always check because we always know that something else has happened in the 3 minutes between what was happening the first time and the second time.
Prepares you well for the legislature.
Do you want to go to 15?
Do you want to do this work session?
Okay,
or
we can.
Have we not? Oh, no, we haven't.
We haven't done it. Okay. Haven't had the hearing yet either.
Sorry. No, you're right. Yes.
So we can go here first if I want?
That'll take longer. Okay. 64. I think 64 makes more sense.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1564. We heard this bill once before, but we have an amendment. So we want to give a short explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Senate Bill 1564 transfers reporting requirements related to ELL programs from school districts to the Department of Education. The committee heard the bill, heard an informational presentation on the measure the first Monday of session, but has not yet had a public hearing. There are Dash 2 amendments that would require the information that the school district reports to be made available annually at both the district office for a school district and on the school district website.
With that, who do we have for testifying? So with that, we will call up Morgan Allen, Precious Chamrani. Thank you. And Cindy Hunt.
Mr. Could I ask you a question? It's your bill. Why would the report be at the beginning of the year rather than the end?
Because they are using last year's data.
It takes that long to get it. Okay.
And they're pulling it all together from the school previous school year, and then they're going to send it back so they have a copy of their understanding of what is going on. Okay. So with that, whoever would like to start.
Okay, it sounds like I'm starting. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Parisa Chanrami, speaking on behalf of Stanford Children and the ELL Advocates Coalition. We're here to speak in favor of both the bill and the Dash 2 amendments, and we've also submitted a coalition letter in support of the Dash 2 amendment as well, and I believe all of you have a copy of that. We believe that 1564 is very practical because it will shift reporting from districts to ODE, since ODE will have most of the data regarding ELL finances and ELL student progress. It'll ensure that the data are validated and that the reporting is consistent, and it will also ensure that all of the information is stored in one place. We also urge you to adopt the Dash 2 amendment because it's important for the reports compiled by the Department of Ed to also be shared with school districts and school boards. We think that that's a very unique opportunity for community members, parents, education leaders to come together to look at how are we doing in terms of serving our ELL students, and we think that that amendment will be really important in ensuring that happens. Once again, urge you to adopt the Dash 2 amendment as well as pass the bill. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin. Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association in support of both the bill and the adoption of the Dash 2 amendment. Essentially, what the amendment does is it says once the department has completed the statewide report, so you have information about ELL students in all 197 of our school districts, they send that report back to each school board, and then the school board makes that available on the district website and a copy of that available in the district office like we have for many other reports and information that we collect, so that once the information is compiled, it's easily accessible. And we appreciate the department bringing the original idea forward. Instead of having 197 individual reports, we'll now have one statewide report that everyone can look at. This will save districts a lot of work, but it's also a reasonable balance to get that information back out once it's compiled. So we support the bill and the amendment.
Cindy Hunt, Government Legal Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Education. We provided testimony during your informational hearing previously on the bill. We also like the amendment and have no concerns about it, and I'm only here to answer questions.
So are there any questions? Yes, Senator Bertscher.
Where's the department going to get the information to make the report?
Yeah. So Chair Roblin, Senator Borshig. I knew I was going to butcher it. Sorry.
Close.
Close. Anyway, is that...
That's an ELL thing.
Yeah. So in the original House Bill 3499 and also in Senate Bill 1564, that goes down a list of items that is to be included in the report. Each of these data points is collected from school districts through other data collections now. For example, you know, the first one talks about the amount allocated to each school district through the state school fund. We have that information through our state school fund reporting system. So when we went down this list very specifically, we identified each piece of data on here is not a new piece of data for us. And so that was one of the reasons we were moving the original bill forward, is to say, you know, we don't need districts to report it to us twice and have that second mandate on them. And so we're confident we have it at the department. But we're also very aware that one of the concerns from advocates was that school districts know about the data for their districts relating to ELL students. So that's why we see the amendment as a nice balance. We expeditiously can produce the report, and yet the districts will know in one place how their ELL students are doing and where the expenditure of monies are related to the students.
Follow up,
yes.
Is there going to be somewhere near that a district can respond to the report if they, you know, if they think it's not right?
Yeah, Chair Roblin, Senator Borshinger. Sorry.
It's getting closer.
It's good practice.
There's an O in there somewhere.
If you just say burnt sugar real fast, you'll be a lot closer.
One of the benefits to using existing data is that we go through data validation exercises. For example, like with the state school fund data, we put that back to the districts, and the districts have a window in which they can correct the data. And that's the case with each of these items that's on here. So each individual item, the districts will have already validated it and reviewed it and that kind of thing. So short answer is yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room who would like to speak to Senate Bill 1564 and forgot to sign up or all of a sudden came up with a need to get up here in front of the committee? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 1564. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1564. Senator Canope.
Do we have any amendments on this one?
Yes, we have the -2 amendments.
All right. Chair Roblin, yes. I move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1564.
Okay. What were they dated?
I have no idea.
We'll have it in a second.
The committee staff is scrambling.
You're dated 2-1-16.
2-1-16.
All right. 2-1-16.
Senator Canope has moved the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1564, dated 2-1-16. Is there any further discussion on those amendments? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the said amendment? The amendments pass. Senator Canope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1564 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Very good. Senator Canope moves House Senate Bill 1564 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. It passes, and I will carry that bill.
I'm getting tired of all this controversial stuff.
I know. We're trying hard to work on those things. Okay, so we will close the work session on... Did I open the work session?
Yeah,
I
opened it. Yeah.
So we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1564, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1541. And with that, we'll have a short explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1541 directs the Department of Education to conduct an evaluation related to financial accountability of school districts. It declares an emergency effective on passage. The measure contains a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, but the paperwork has come back and there is no fiscal impact. It's a minimal fiscal impact. So if the committee should move the bill, Ways and Means says it does not have to go back.
Okay. Senator Hess, do you want to...
Yeah, thank you very briefly. I know we've got the department here, and I wanted to have a discussion with them. But essentially, there are very few real concrete restrictions or regulations on the money that the legislature puts into the K-12 fund that have to be followed once that money gets to the school districts. And what this measure says is can the Department of Education look at a way that might suggest some accountability measures? And I'll give you some analogies. We have an equalization system where every pupil gets about the same amount of money in all of our schools. So if that's true, then why is it that David Douglas has 180 school days and Oregon City has 156? That does not seem right to me. Why do some districts have small class sizes, others have large class sizes? Why do some school districts allow the spending of K-12 money for college? We never authorize that, and I don't mean to suggest a sore subject, Senator Gelser, but that's not what was allowed or permitted, and it's not a terrible thing. It's just there are very few requirements there. Where this hit me the most, though, was in this last session when the legislature increased the school's budget by 10%. But when some school districts hand out two-year raises of 12% or 14%, or they hire 18 new administrators, and as a result of that, class sizes increase, they say blame the legislature for not funding schools. And to me, this doesn't add up. There is a disconnect between what the legislature appropriates and what schools actually do. Now, you won't find any more of a champion of local control than for me, but for better or worse, ballot measure 5 back in the 90s gave most of the spending authority to the state. And I often see the priorities that we talk about, such as class sizes and the length of the school year, and fighting poverty, relegated to the back seat in many of our school districts. And I just want to see some accountability for our priorities being tracked along the school district. Don't get me wrong, I think most school districts are on the same page as us, but not always. So this bill doesn't do that. It just asks the Department of Education to look at their data and see how we can all get back on the same page. So with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I know we have Brian Reeder from the department here to discuss ways he thinks that we might be able to do that.
Please, Brian.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent in the Research Office at Department of Ed. As Senator Haas described, despite the fact that we equalize funding per weighted student across the state, we do see a lot of variation on how districts choose to spend their money, in which categories, for example, instruction versus support services and so forth. And clearly we would expect to see a certain amount of variation depending on the nature of the student body they're serving. Certain needs are larger in these areas in this district than they are in the same areas in another district. But what this kind of evaluation would allow us to do is look at both the allocation of spending to various categories and also the nature of the student bodies their the districts are serving, the salary structure that they're paying, which varies considerably around the state, partly because of different levels of experience in the staffs in various school districts, but really gives us a chance to look at how much variation there is out there and whether we can see any obvious reasons why that exists and potentially how it relates to student performance within the district. So it's the kind of work that the research office at ODE has been, we've been working on it, various pieces of this over the years, but this would be an opportunity to bring a bunch of that information together in one place and maybe provide some insights for the legislature.
So questions?
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Just something I think is worth taking a look at why we're doing this, and it was a long time ago there was a lawsuit over equalization, and basically it was punted to saying it's equal because we say it is. And I guess one of the things I might be curious about is if some of the differences are tied in some ways to the weights themselves, because funding is not equal. You know, some schools have a lot more weights than others, and they get more money because of that. So, you know, it's kind of a whole matrix here that I think we need to look at all factors when we're exploring this.
Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, I think you're exactly right. I mean, the weights were intended, at least partially, to adjust for the different costs of educating students with different needs. And so one question comes up, are the weights at the right level they need to be at? And I think we don't really know that today. I would argue we don't know that today, and that we should look into that. This kind of study called for in this bill doesn't focus on that, but it's getting at the same kind of question, and that is, are districts spending their money in ways that serve their students the best? And if we don't think they are, there could be a number of reasons for that, but this would be a first step in understanding how and why there may be that kind of variation out there.
That's true. Follow up?
Yep.
You know, the weight system's kind of been the third rail that everybody's been afraid to touch for a long, long, long time. And I guess what I would hope is that we may, out of this, because I know that's not the focus, we may come up with an idea that maybe it's something we ought to take a look at. Because the weight system's been in place for 20 years, maybe 30, I'm not sure, more like 30 years. And one would have to assume that the world has changed a little bit since then, and maybe adjustments might need to be made. It would be a huge undertaking to do, but taking a look at it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. So, I mean,
we're going to vote on.
I know that's not your focus, but you might be able to come back to us and say, maybe you guys ought to take a look. So.
Yeah, and my feeling is that we have done things in the legislature because I think we needed to. One of those has to do with small schools that are out there and remote schools. And in that conversation, it would probably, I don't know if you're going to look at that, but I think it's one of those kinds of things. If we get into this conversation, are we doing it the right way? We pick a number and we give them money, we divide it up, and they've made it with that. We had a big conversation last session about that, and we came to an agreement. But like so many of our agreements, they're based on the political politically getting a place where everybody can agree, as opposed to if there's any data. I'm not sure that we'll use your data. I'm just saying, because when we start talking about changing the formula, those battles were long and hard, and it's an interesting deal. And I think people who have been around for a long time recognize that the formula is not based on what we know it costs to teach each one of these students. It's about how do we distribute resources that we have in a way that the people who are getting them can come to some kind of an agreement that that's as fair as we can get. So I think that's an important part of as we look at this. Are there kinds of things that we can learn? But if two school districts are very similar and they're having totally different outcomes and totally different uses of their money, it would probably be good for us to understand a little bit why that's happening. So, statement. Thank you. Yes, Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Building on that, I'm much more interested in the outcomes conversation than the inputs, the number of hours or days in a seat. So, looking at the per student spending and the outcomes, what are the districts that have the highest on-time four-year completion rates and five-year completion rates, and why are those different from place to place? What are the decisions that are being made? I think the senator makes a really good point. One does have to wonder why there could be such a disparity in days. I'm interested in how that plays out in terms of student achievement. And I remain confused about how you can have a district like Corvallis with a nearly 90% four-year on-time graduation rate, or Albany that's also very high and has a very diverse student population, and that's so far above the state average or above an urban population in the metro area. I don't know how that stacks up in terms of days, but I'm much more interested in who's graduating from high school and what decisions those districts are making to support their teachers and their students than the actual amount of time that butts are in seats.
Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, I believe item C in the amendments is getting at those very kind of questions, and we look forward to looking into those.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, yep. May I, just on the issue of time, we had a conversation last year about new rules that are requiring certain percentages of students to take a full load as they get to the end of the year. I was talking to the principal of one of our local high schools, and he was very concerned about how that would impact the gains that they are making in their high school graduation rates. The reason being, when they have seniors who have more than the credits that they need to graduate, and they are wanting to use an additional hour to do an online class or go do an internship or work in a job, that frees up time to do remediation for kids who are behind and to create additional sections for academic support for those kids. He's very worried as they have to move up to take a bunch of kids who don't need extra credits and put them in a yoga aerobics class, that means he's gonna have more kids that can't get the extra support they need to fulfill their math credits and actually graduate from high school.
Yeah, Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, we haven't looked at that phenomenon directly, but we have heard anecdotally that because a certain percentage of typically seniors don't take a full load in their last semester, for example, that a lot of districts count on that to free up resources for other things. So it's an important question to look at. The flip side, of course, is that we also hear that students who aren't in school full-time in their last semester tend to lose some of their learning. And then when they hit college, they're not where they should be. So I think that cuts both ways, but certainly is an important question to look at.
Thank you.
And I guess my last concern or question, not really a concern. We have a minimal fiscal on this bill, which means that obviously you've done some of this work already, and it's a synthesis or something, because it sounds very wide open and very large in scope, and I was just making sure that the resources are there to actually do this kind of a study without extra money.
Yeah, Senator Roblin, we have done, I mean, you mentioned small schools. We have done studies, and it's been a while now, both ODE and Legislative Revenue did studies of the small school correction. We have, over the last 4 or 5 years, developed models that look at the link between funding and student achievement, the link between demographics and student achievement. So in some sense, it is a synthesis of work we've done, but it will be work on the latest, using the latest data we have, but sort of using techniques and methodologies that we've been using for a number of years. So we're not going to need to reinvent the wheel here. So I think a minimum fiscal is a reasonable thing here.
Okay. Any other questions, sir? Mr. Reeder, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
We have, and I'll see how well I do, Parhasha, close. Chad Ralit, me. Yeah, I knew I messed that one up. Come on up, along with Joel Fisher.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Parasa Chanrami, speaking on behalf of Stand for Children. Today we'd like to speak in favor of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1541. We support this amendment for a couple of reasons. We like how it would review school district spending levels and instruction, support services, everything from administration to transportation. We also appreciate how it would identify and evaluate multiple factors that affect and influence district spending levels. And last, what we really appreciate is that once ODE is conducting this evaluation, they are also required to determine whether differences in spending are connected to student outcomes. So looking at student attendance, as well as how students are meeting the standards and graduating on time. We believe that the information from this report that's compiled by the Department of Ed will be valuable in helping lawmakers, district and school leaders, and parents learn more about the landscape of district spending, which investments are making a difference for student learning and success. And then last, how we might better allocate district education resources to effective strategies that are aligned with student achievement goals. And with that, thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide association with over 300 members all across Oregon, both big and small. I'd like to start by giving Senator Haas extra credit and Senator Beyer, if you were here, for wearing red on today, which is Chinese New Year, and say Xin Yin Kuai Le, which means Happy New Year in Chinese. We're here to testify in support of the Dash 1 amendments. You guys have all pretty much hit the nail on the head. This will go a long way in helping give better information so that we can make better decisions. And with that, we urge your support.
Mr. Chair, I point out this is the kind of red.
That's right.
Oh. I'll give you a half point.
All right.
Some credit.
Yeah. Senator Cruz gets some credit.
Year of the monkey, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Year of the Monkey.
Yeah. Yep.
So is there any questions for this group? Seeing none, thank you very much, both of you. I have a general standing rule. If we haven't had a hearing, we don't move the bill. I'm okay with moving this bill if people are okay. So I'm just looking around to see if there's any concerns. Okay. I mean, I just want to make sure. Oh, yeah. Come on up. I should have said that first. Anybody else that didn't sign up that would like to speak to this? Thank you.
They're not going to drop a bomb on us.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, we're going to speak, I think, in opposition to this bill, the amendments as well. Certainly listening to the discussion, Again, we've been down this road. All of the information we need has been compiled by the Department of Education. I'm surprised they showed up today without it. Frankly, I've seen so many of the reports just to show you the stack of let's take another look at the formula, let's take another look and rediscuss funding and all the rest of it. Let's just be real honest about what the problem is here. It's another way to take a look at the school system and not discuss the elephant in the room, which is substantial underfunding. We think about $2 billion. It's just, to us, it's that simple. The districts are all different. Certainly, it is enticing to think you can run every school district from Salem, I'm sure, but you can't. This really is a question of local control. Each district is different. They handle themselves differently. I think the suggestion that school districts are not responding to the needs of their individual children, I think as I listen to the description, I think from Senator Gelser about what's going on in Corvallis. That's what's going on in Corvallis. I'll tell you what, in John Day, there's a young guy who doesn't have a home. But he's been able, he doesn't have his family there, but he's been able to work in John Day by not having to go to school all day, every day, but he's going to graduate from high school. He's having some success. But if you change those hours, he's out of work. He cannot go to work. He does not have a home. I mean, these are the kinds of stories we hear about in terms of hours. And you can run down the list. We've just been down this road so many times. You can kind of expect what I think the discussion will look like next session as the report's presented, sort of a how come this district spends more on transportation and less on personnel, or some number that suggests that in bargaining, districts are not doing the job. It just feels like we've been here, having done this now for over 15 years. This just sounds so familiar. It's sort of every session, let's take another run at this discussion. At some point, you need to decide, do you want to be the school board for every school district? Because that's what this starts to devolve into. And it has not been done well. If you look at the state's history of education policy making, it has driven costs, it has created unfunded mandates, it has not resulted in better education or better outcomes. It does, though, have new names with every new governor. Now maybe we'll go to each legislative assembly and see if we can come up with a new name for what we're going to call the education system. I find this just kind of disappointing that this is the road we would go down. So, yeah, I guess we are opposed to it right now.
Sounded like it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green appearing on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. I would echo some of the concerns that Mr. Bennett has from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And I do believe in what Senator Hess says, that he is a very staunch advocate of local control. I've worked with him on several issues over the years, and I do believe that. But as I listened to the testimony from the Department of Ed, it did cause me concern representing locally elected school boards. Decisions made at a local district level have been made for a specific reason. Many of you on this committee have sat on school boards or on budget committees, and I currently sit on a school board. We make conscious decisions as members of a school board about how we're going to spend money because our constituents and our community come to us and say, we really want this. And let me give you an example here in Salem-Keizer. We still have orchestra in elementary grades. I'm proud to say that. We win more state championships in music, choir, every other string instrument in the state than any schools across. And we know that drives student achievement. But if you had the Department of Ed take a look at our instructional time, they'd say, boy, there's a lot of music instruction going on. Yes, there is. Because we have made a conscious decision in this community that it is important. And we've seen our student test scores grow with regard to the nexus between our music programs and where our kids perform and how they graduate. The other thing that's not in this Dash 1 amendment is you're not looking at the populations of students districts are serving. I can tell you in this district alone, in 10 years, our demographics in Salem-Keizer have totally changed. totally changed. We are now a majority-minority school district. 10 years ago, the population of our district for minority status was about 30%. We're over 50 now. We have the largest number of poverty students in the state residing in this school district. The decisions we make at the board level and at the budget level, we try to impact what's going on with our kids. And it changes from year to year. It changes from school to school. And I can tell you from a statewide perspective, representing 197 different school districts, Senator Gelser, they may be the same size, but they are vastly different. Because I can show you the Medford School District is just a little bit larger than the Corvallis School District, but the populations they serve are vastly different. And I think while there is some good data that the Department of Education can provide to you about, well, districts are spending this much on instruction, districts are spending this much on transportation, that also depends on how that district is coding that information. Because I can tell you in some of our instruction that the department may code as direct instruction, we may call that student services. Because of the types of students we're seeing. I would hope that if you look at the bill and the Dash 1 amendments, you'd take a broader scope and say, okay, if we really want to drill down on how school districts are spending their dollars on what they're going to do for boys and girls, you'd take a look at the information that's already currently being provided to the department. I think you heard from Mr. Reeder, there's a minimal fiscal here. Do you know why? They have the data. It's already there. Ask the question and you can see where districts are spending their data. The other thing I think that we need to be aware of is if you're just going to base it on test scores, that's somewhat problematic because you passed an opt-out bill last session. We are seeing higher levels of opt-out across the state. We have assessments going on daily in classrooms. Mr. Chair, you've been a teacher. You know that a statewide assessment is a one-point-in-time test. But where teachers can really impact instruction is on their daily, weekly assessments of where kids are. That won't be shown in this data. And I think it's important for you to remember, you have locally elected school boards in statute to make these decisions. We are the people that are held accountable by the voters in our school district to do the things for our boys and girls. Are we doing the best we can across this state? No, I don't believe we are, but I think the major problem there is a resource problem. We've all talked about this quality education model for a really long time, like it's pie in the sky. Did you know that if we funded us at the quality education model in the state of Oregon today, we would be below the national average on school funding? We're shooting for below the national average, and we can't even get there. So, yes, Mr. Chair, I guess we'd be opposed to this bill, too.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So just a question for Jim. Aside from the spending, and you know I agree that we're underfunded, I've just really been wrestling with the information that's come out in the last couple of years as we look district to district at student achievement based on different subgroups. And I do look at a district like the one that I live in and seeing the difference that aligned instructional leadership can make without any additional resources to significantly increase a graduation rate. So, I mean, you look at this district over 3 years, the funding model didn't change. It didn't get substantially different, but the outcomes for the students did in every category. Double digit gains for ELL students, for economically disadvantaged students, double gains. They doubled their 4-year regular graduation rate for kids in special ed. I would think we would want to know why that happened. How did that turnaround happen without additional funds? So how would you suggest that we get that information? Because what I've seen in the communities that I represent is that even with the restrictions that we have around funding, aligned leadership that empowers teachers to do what they do best every day in the classroom really pays in dividends. But all I see us talking about is money and test scores rather than what does it take to post the types of results that you see in Corvallis.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Gelser, very good point. I'd say a couple of things to that. You'll remember this last legislative session, we passed a bill, and I can't remember the bill number, that is really going to look at our ELL instruction and how we spend those dollars. And I think that will change some of the outcomes with regard to students. I think you're exactly right. As student achievement goes, it depends on who's at the leadership in the district. It takes a board that's bought into a vision and a plan. It takes a superintendent and administrative team to come up with a vision. and plan and budget to that plan to say, boy, if we've got a problem with third grade reading in our school district, this is how we're going to change that. And I can tell you what we did here in Salem-Keizer, we went out and got a new reading curriculum, and it's not cheap because we weren't aligned all the way across our curriculum with the standards that we currently had in place, and we were having teachers actually have to make copies of math curriculum and reading curriculum. Well, we bought a new curriculum. I think if you have leadership at the top who come up with a vision, a plan, know that their data is out there, because school districts really have to work with data. It used to be a lot easier 20 years ago to be on a school board or be a school administrator. You kind of knew the issues. But now you've really got to bear down on that data because we have those subgroups. And I'm not saying we're doing the best for every subgroup in the state. Those scores are abominable, and we've got to do something. If this study can help us with that, then we're all behind that. But I don't think districts are just spending money willy-nilly just to try to do what they can. They really want to do the best they can for their kids. And I think one of the things we did last session with the ELL is exactly what we could do with other populations as well to drive up those achievement scores and those graduation rates.
And Mr. Chair, I think that there's a value in that, but you also kind of made my point. I mean, that study, this conversation, it's all focused on the money. What did we spend? What curriculum did we buy? And a big piece of this is the culture. How much are we trusting our teachers? How much are we empowering them to work their magic with kids every day instead of getting in their way and telling them what to do? What are we doing to change cultures? So we had a girl in here the other night that talked about her principal or her teacher telling her that she would never amount to anything, that she couldn't graduate, that she couldn't go to college. I mean, I think that those types of issues are much more impactful than a study about where the dollars go. I think what we have to look at is, where is the messaging going to these kids? How are we empowering them, and how do we move beyond that conversation of just the dollars? We know we need more funding. I don't think there's anybody that disagrees that we need more funding, but we also have a reality that we're working within, and we now have districts that are showing us within that reality, not just by moving around where they spend the dollars, but changing the way they engage with kids and changing the way they empower teachers. They're posting results. So my point is just, it's not just the money. We get really hung up on the dollars, and dollars are important, but what we're actually doing with kids matters a lot too. And I don't ever see us talking. I would like to see someone point to these districts that are doing really well and say, show us how you did that, because we want to do it too. And not to say, well, your kids are easier than our kids, because I don't think that's the case.
And Ms. Chair, Senator Gelser, I don't disagree with you, but I don't think you're going to get that out of this type of study. I don't think you're going to get that type of information out of this study. And I think if a principal says to a student, you can't achieve, that person shouldn't be a principal anymore.
Right.
Just plain and simple.
And Senator Gelser, the TEL survey is starting to provide that. We are starting to develop that kind of information and data. I mean, we're really, I think we've not made either at the national or the state level the kind of investment in professional development that needs to be made. We have allocated funds from high school to kindergarten. I know that the meme is we paid for kindergarten. We didn't. We don't believe, but so you see reallocations as a result of these kinds of swings in policy that occur at the legislative level. And so there, the information, I think, is out there. I think it's a function of asking the right questions. These, we just don't think, this is about the money again. This is, should we divide it up differently and somehow we'll get a different outcome? Or, let's look at the formula and see if it's somehow in the formula. Or I just don't think this is the right discussion. I certainly would love to have, we hope we'll have a conversation with you over the next year heading into the next session where we can talk to you about what we think's going on in the schools. We're certainly working on it several organizations are working on it now, but this going back down this road and trying to replow this field just doesn't make sense at this point to us. There's just there's better use of our time. And certainly, if Brian and the department want to come in and produce for you on their own, they've got the money, they've got the data. Apparently, it doesn't cost them much. They could tell you all kinds of stuff. apparently they haven't been telling you. We don't think that's the case.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just want to be clear. We're not saying we're trying to hide anything that districts are doing. It's a very public process. I mean, our books are audited every year. We have to explain to the department where we're spending not only state school fund dollars, but federal grants that come to us. You know, I think Senator Gelser makes a very good point. If there are districts who are doing outstanding things with kids, there ought to be a way for us, even at the state level, and you as legislators ought to expect this, that that district ought to be able to go to other districts and say, this is what we're doing. We had started down that road at the Department of Ed, but there was not any money put behind it to say, okay, Corvallis, you're doing a great deal with four-year cohort graduation rate. Why is that? And why can't that be replicated? I'm just going to take a school district. I don't know their graduation data right off the top of my head, but why can't that be replicated in the Reynolds High School, which is about the same size? I don't know populations of the kids, but we started down a process with that at the Department of Ed. I'm not sure where that ended up. And I think that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reminds me of this Shakespearean line, "Methinks they protest too loudly here." I'm taken aback by your strenuous objection. And as Senator Gelser stated, there's nothing nefarious here. I think some value could come out of this. And to say we know what this analysis will conclude, you know, turns over all everything upside down in if you're from the science world. And I nobody's going to cut orchestra here. Nobody. We're just saying let's get this information out there because there are some really wide variations in what schools are doing. 20 class days in a school year.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at what's going on and find out what schools are doing to get a 90% graduation and do that. And that's all this is. It's a study. And you guys are coming out with guns a-blazing here.
Well,
so it makes me suspect,
yeah.
And it really kind of adds impetus as to why maybe we should be looking at this.
Certainly understand your feeling, Senator, but if you want to know the answer to those, ask your department the question because they apparently have the answer to these questions.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. The reason we put these into legislation is to raise the awareness, put hard deadlines there, and I think that does add some attention to the fact that we're looking at this, looking at ways to do things better, and I think that should be sort of a relentless duty on our part, especially as education policymakers, to say, how do we keep getting better here? Not, you know, well, we did this in 1972, and we already know the answer.
Yeah, I certainly understand how we all want to get better. We just, again, Senator, we just replow this every session. We've been down this road over and over and over again, and the outcome never seems to be different. It is an understanding, I think, from our perspective of, one more time, you underfund education, seriously underfund education. And somehow you get this, and it may be just that level of just genuine concern that there is this belief in the legislature that if you could only find the right bill and do the right policy, somehow it will fix it all. And it is flavor of the month, flavor of the year, flavor of the administration that comes through. It might be kindergarten, it might be early childhood, it might be ELL, it might be, we know it's all of those pieces that have not been funded that will bring us to the kind of outcomes that become really outstanding and universal. But you know, there's nothing we can do to stop you. I mean, you can run us down that road again, but we've been down that road. And usually it also results in let's talk about fiddling with the distribution formula, and it just never seems to come to any kind of really productive outcome. So maybe it's just frustration, and having done this for too long and been down this road too many times, don't mean to sound like we can't do it. We can do it, but I'm not sure we get anywhere.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hass, I thought you were going to do the line, let's kill all the lawyers, because that's always what they say when I'm going to talk. But I don't think we're protesting the idea. One of the things that I hear from school administrators, from teachers, from building-level administrators is, fine, go ahead and come study us, but please don't make me fill out another report. Don't make me fill out another document that I got to send off to ODE. And I don't know if Brian and his department are not going to put out any new data requests or anything, because I can tell you we have a significant number of administrators, at, I know in my school district and in school districts across the state, that are just overburdened with data requests on what they're doing. And I think it's a good thing to get the data, but these folks have a primary job, which is to provide educational services to our boys and girls. It's not to fill out a paper. And I know the data is important. And I'm not trying to hide any data. And if we can do better outcomes for kids and this data will do that, I'm all for it. I just don't believe that it's going to do that.
Chair.
Yes.
I was. We're very clear with Salaam and the Department of Education. Nobody's going to fill out any forms. The data exists. It just needs to be evaluated and analyzed. And that's all it is. It's a study. This is a study bill. That's all it is. Nobody's cutting any programs. We're just looking at it. It's just new information and more information. And nobody's suggesting that we're fully funding schools. I'd be the first one to disabuse him of that notion.
Senator Gelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to commend the chair for having both Senator Hess and I together on an education committee, which is... you're a good principal. In terms of the study and the gathering of information, this might be a question for Senator Hass. How much of this information is different than what's in the kind of Open Books project in Chalkboard?
I think there's information the department has, and probably a better question for Brian Reeder, but the Open Book doesn't have. That's just my guess.
You want to bring Brian up again?
I'm just...
Any questions for these two?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian, you want to come up and maybe you can take a shot at that question? And while he's coming up, I did want to make two comments. Number one, the Dash 1 amendments, we don't have the paperwork for, so if we want those, we have to put it over till Wednesday.
Then that's what we'll do.
We need that.
We need it.
Okay.
No, okay, that makes it good.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Chalkboard project started, oh gosh, I don't remember exactly how many years ago, but their initial version of Open Books was primarily basic demographic data and financial data. All of that data came from us. All of that data still comes from us. We do have a lot more data than they do. Clearly, we have student-level data that they are not allowed to see. Test data, individual student demographic data, and so forth. So, you know, they basically what they've done primarily is summarize the data that we have and have provided to them. The kind of study that I would envision here, and in reference to Mr. Green's point about understanding the different student populations that different schools and districts have, clearly any kind of study that we do would take that into account. We're not simply comparing outcomes across schools or districts. We take into account as much information. And that information about student demographics is critical. We know it's been known for more than half a century that students from low-income families need more help. Students from different ethnic groups have less success in school and may need different kinds of teaching and different kinds of services. So clearly we take that into account. In my mind, the greatest benefit to doing this kind of work is learning which schools are doing well and seeing, you know, back to the point of sharing information across districts and schools about what works. This is part of that. It's about evaluating how resources are used and to what end, whether good results or not so good results, depending on how you use those dollars. So clearly information that we need to know and that can be helpful to distribute to across the state to districts to help them do better.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
We have studied this ad nauseum. I understand that. But I would also suggest that things continue to change and there may be new things discovered, but I would also suggest, Mr. Chair, that the players in this building change as well. And to be bringing new information in then it may still be a lot of the same old stuff, but it becomes newer to those of us that have been here for a while, and certainly for those who are new into this process. And it may be a pain for some people to have to do this, but at the end of the day, I don't think we have ever suffered in our decision making from having too much information.
Okay. Any other questions for?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Canope.
Brian, Senator Haas indicated that you weren't going to be asking districts for reports and things like that. So can you tell us, can you do this survey, this report, study, whatever you want to call it, without requesting information from the school districts and our schools, or do you have, are there things that you're going to have that you don't currently have?
Chair Roblin, Senator Canope, our reading of the original bill, it was that it was calling for an additional data collection, and we objected to that, which is why we entered into discussions with Senator Haas, and it turns out that what he intended was not the way we interpreted the original bill. He did not intend a giant new data collection, but rather to take the data we have and better understand how different districts are using their resources. His point, I think, is a good one, that we have a broad range of length of school year, we have a broad range of class sizes. Just how does that happen, given that most districts have about the same amount of money per weighted student? And one answer, I think, is, well, they're making trade-offs. They're saying, well, we're willing to have slightly larger class sizes so that we can do this, or we're willing to do without one particular elective so that we can have smaller math class sizes. So they're making those choices. And I think Mr. Green is exactly right. School districts are making choices to best serve their students. My kids were beneficiaries of the fantastic music they have at Salem Kaiser. That might have meant larger math classes. Those are the things we want to find out. On the other hand, there may be cases where districts simply aren't using their resources as well as they could, and that those districts who are doing really well at the same level of resources that other districts have, you know, are finding ways to do those things better. They may be non-tangible things that can't be bought with money. But given the level of money we do spend in Oregon, roughly $5 billion a year, all resources, it's certainly worth looking at how well they're being used.
So to clarify,
yep.
I'm not going to get a call from my two school districts that said, why did you pass this bill? And now I'm filling out this report or that report. You can do this completely without any help from the school districts themselves.
Chair Roblin, Senator Knope, I don't intend to contact any school districts for additional data at all. We've got a lot of data. We've made a commitment to school districts that we won't ask for more data.
Okay.
Further questions?
Thank you very much. So we will close our public hearing, and we're going to wait for the paperwork, so we won't put this back. We'll put it on a work session at the next one, but gather any other information, have some conversation with each of you about whether we're going to move forward with the bill on Wednesday. So right now we're going to close the public hearing on anything else? Nope. 1541. We're going to open. Is it going to go to? We'll go to, I'll say sorry to my good friends who I thought were going to go first. We're going to do one more little one because we have Senator Thatcher here. So we'll go to Senate Bill 1566 with a public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee.
I was just going to say, we did have a hearing in the day when you couldn't have hearings the first day. So this bill has been heard, at least in this committee, but this is a formal public hearing.
It's been discussed.
It's been discussed, but not yet heard. Okay. And this bill deals with open enrollment.
Very good. There we go. So, Senator Thatcher, I sat in for you the other day.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. It's always good when the chair of the committee is on board. For the record, I'm Kim Thatcher, state senator from District 13. And well, you did get some information on it, but just very briefly, this bill would, and the amendment, I think we're discussing dash six amendments at this point.
I think that's where we're at, yep.
Because that's where the agreement is. That's where the compromises have been made. This bill is related to parent choice, and we're taking it up this session simply because it was set to expire before the next session. So we want to extend the sunset. That's essentially all we're doing because it's important for kids to be able to go to other school districts on occasion. There is not many people that have to or choose to, but it is very helpful for those who are able to make that choice right now without having to get permission from their resident school district to transfer to another school district. So this would extend the sunset and allow us to take up some of the issues that are of concern to some people and deal with it in the next big session. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. Any questions? And we'll talk about the dash sixes in a minute. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And should we go to the list for this one? So with that, Morgan Allen, and it looks like Susan McKenzie.
Please go first.
I will go with it.
Okay, I'll have a go at it. Senator Roblin, I'm Susie McKenzie. I'm the superintendent at Gaston School District, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 1566 with the amendments. We have currently about 563 students in our small school district in Western Washington County, K-12, and we have about 24% open enrollment. And so we are hugely affected by that. And many people have asked why. Why is that so? And I just want to share a little bit about that. In Gaston, we don't have huge housing availability. So I can think just off the top of my head of three families that have had multiple generations of family members that have gone to school in Gaston, but because they can't procure housing, they have to move out of district. And then when they move out of district, they still want their students to attend where they went to school or where they had started. And that's something that they can do through open enrollment. Many of our students have attended small private schools, and so their parents, they top out at like eighth grade or sixth grade. Their parents want them to go to school in a small school like what they were used to, so they end up at Gaston or in our district. Some of the students that are there are family members of staff people that work there, and they want their kids to go where they're at. It's all about choice. And then there are those parents that come in and say, we want a smaller environment for our students, a smaller community, a smaller school environment, but they live and work in another nearby town because Gaston doesn't have huge industry, so people have to commute. And then there are those people that are not satisfied with the district that their students are in, and they're looking for a change. But I just want to make you aware of there's a whole host of reasons why people send their students and participate in open enrollment. One student that we had last year, and I had planned to bring her, but with such short notice, she couldn't come. She's about 30 miles away. She had spent about 5 years of homeschooling because of special needs that she just felt like she couldn't go to public school. The school district she was in was too large, and she was overwhelmed by that. And through contacts, she ended up at Gaston, and she's now goes to public school and doesn't have to homeschool, and it's been a real positive experience for her. Open enrollment has helped our district fiscally, but there are also challenges with open enrollment too. And I could go into those, I won't. So it's there are both. Inter-district transfer with the change in those laws and the way it works has helped, but it's more of a in-the-moment type of a decision, whereas open enrollment for a school district, you find out at the end of March how many kids you're possibly looking at having in your district, and you can plan ahead. When you're able to plan ahead and be ready for those students to come in, that equals greater success for the district. When all of a sudden it's like, oh, so-and-so wants to come in for open enrollment, it's doable, but it's a little bit more challenging. It's a little bit more in the moment. And I see a need for both, because students' lives and parents' lives are not neat and tidy, where you can always plan ahead. So there is a need for both the inter-district transfer and open enrollment. And so for those reasons, I support Senate Bill 1566 and keeping that happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Oregon School Boards Association, and we have proposed a Dash 6 amendment. And I did have an opportunity to testify about this last week, and I just want to just go back to one of the reasons that I discussed a week ago today and why we're bringing the Dash 6 amendment. And actually, I appreciate the superintendent talking about sort of the pros and cons of both inter-district transfer and open enrollment. And that's really the issue we're looking to address here, Mr. Chair. Since 2011, I'll just call it, for lack of a better term, our student transfer system has changed quite significantly. And there have been a bunch of legislative changes, the addition of open enrollment, significant changes to inter-district transfer. And the Dash 6 amendments, what we're proposing to do is move the sunset back two additional years to July 1st, 2019. And our intention, and I would encourage the committee administrator to double check and make sure this is what the amendment does, because it is 18 pages. but all that we're intending to do here is move the sunset date back 2 years. And so now we'd have the 2016-17, the 2017-18, and the 2019 school years would still have open enrollment. And I believe you, Mr. Chair, and I believe in the House, there's a commitment to get some folks together in the interim and try to address the two-tiered system we have and come up with one system that works better for families and students and works better for school districts, and tries to take the attributes of each system that are working, put them together so that no matter where you live, there's one consistent transfer system in the Oregon, and everyone's doing it the same way, and the rules and regulations are the same way. And that's our intent, and that's why we're bringing the Dash 6 forward. So it provides some certainty for some additional time so that districts can continue to plan ahead, and those that are interested in doing open enrollment can still do it for a couple more years, and gives the legislature time to address collaboratively the issue of our overall transfer system and see if we can get it down to one system that works better for everybody.
Thank you. Any questions for either of these people? And I want to thank Senator Gelser for the work she did a long time ago on inter-district transfer. It used to be a lot more complex than it is today, but it's still a different kind of thing than open enrollment. And so I look forward to the opportunity. I've talked to the House. I believe they will entertain the same thing, and that way it means that we can move forward. And I like that, and I like the fact that people have come from all the different groups to say, let's all work together to get this done. And I think it's been an open conversation with lots of people, and we don't have to be under the gun of what's happening right now. You know, get it done this year or it's over. I think it makes it more secure for parents and people and school districts over the next year, and hold us to the fire with respect to getting the other stuff done. So thank you, Morgan. And is our amendment, have we got all the paperwork on that one, or do we need to put this?
Oh, no. Yeah.
That's what I figured. So there, I anticipate we will be getting some information for the next meeting on this one, but thank you very much. Did you wish to speak to our representative?
Just here.
So thank you both. Senator Gelser, do you have a question?
So the Dash 6 amendment is a consensus amendment from
House and here.
House and here and all parties?
Seems to be everybody I've talked to has said yes, let's go forward.
Anybody who doesn't like it, stand up. There you go.
There's some people that would like it to be a little longer. There's some people who would like a little shorter.
I mean, the consensus amendment, usually everybody's a little unhappy.
So. Be good, Julie.
The answer is that I have talked to all of the people It is not their first choice for many of them. For other people, it is their first choice, and for some people, they would rather it went away. So given all of that, this is an agreement that appears to be able to go through the Senate and through the House and give us time to work on the other stuff. And that's, I don't see anybody shaking their head no to that. Okay.
And just to be clear, Mr. Chair, I know some, there's some other versions floating around with data collections or task forces. None of that is in this bill. This is just a straight two-year extension, and I think there's an informal, now somewhat memorialized commitment that people, the two education committee chairs, will bring folks together and have a discussion to move forward. That seems to be my impression.
And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill is, as Morgan says, 18 pages long because it is a rarely seen triple amend that has nothing to do with the content of the actual bill. It just has everything to do with the actual drafting where statutes fell out. So that's why the bill is so long.
And there was a few things that were in it and in the statute that had to do with foreign exchange students and a whole bunch of other kinds of stuff that don't appear to deal with this one, and they have to be fixed. So, and this one does not do anything with extending the sunset on the multiple authorizers and that kind of stuff. It narrowed it to just that one conversation. Okay. And I know that's part of...
It's a sunset extension.
Pardon?
It's a sunset extension.
It is a sunset.
A really thick one.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 1566. And we're going to open just a public hearing, an official public hearing on Senate Bill. An informational meeting on Senate Bill 1536. We've heard it before. This has to do with funding for charter schools. So with that, Karen, you can come up and tell what happened with our work group and our discussions.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the Senate Education Committee, Karin Hikas for the record. And I believe the document I'm going to share with you is on OLIS now. Gave it to Richard right before the committee hearing. So you can see the details of the agreement that we put together with the key parties in this work group on charter school funding. So we've had three informal work group meetings. I thought we had around 30 people at its highest. Jim Green told me earlier he thought it was closer to 50. Definitely large groups of people interested in this issue, as you can imagine. The key parties to the agreement, or the key parties in the work group, that represent kind of the primary points of view, have agreed to having a smaller work group. We had hoped for 6. We're actually at 12, so twice the size we had kind of hoped for, but much smaller than what we've had, that will commit to work during this interim. So we're not going to have a bill, is really one of the bottom lines. No bill. 1536 is... We're throwing roses on the grave right now. So we will have 12 folks that work together over the interim. We will continue to be mediated or facilitated by our phenomenal facilitator, Sam Imperati. The group will be comprised of 4 legislators. Senator Cruz, hopefully you got my email on that. That you
had heard that.
You were recommended as the 4th. So probably Senator Roblin, Representative Doherty, Representative Huffman, and Senator Cruz. And 4 Education Association representatives, OEA, OSBA, COSA, and OSEA. By the way, you won't see OSEA's signature on the agreement. It's because she's out sick today, but she is in agreement. She wanted me to pass that on. And then 4 public charter school representatives, an advocate, board member, director, and teacher. And we will be staffed by Legislative Committee Administration and Legislative Council and probably ODE as well. We will plan to meet later this month to map out our schedule for the year and take a look at what data we think we need to look at initially. The focus of the work group, the scope is how should brick and mortar public charter schools be funded? That's the focus of the work group. So we'll be looking at data that we agree is pertinent to that and seeing what we can do on this issue for next session.
Yes.
Is this obviously it's an official group if we're using? Is this something the president's going to do, or are you going to do it?
We're doing it.
You're going to do it at the committee. Margaret will do it, and that'll be it. Okay.
It is the most official, unofficial meeting I have ever seen in my life. We're asking the different groups to prevent their own people. We appreciate Mr. Green and his association and organization for being willing to help with some of the funding to make this have a conversation. So we aren't asking for any funding from the state, and he's been working on an agreement with our other person from Oregon Solutions. And I talked to Richard and said, you know, we can do this form and put a bill in, or we can just do it. And I think they're willing at this point to be a part of that. So we appreciate it. He's been in a number of unofficial ones. But as I said, this is the most official unofficial group I've ever seen. So with that, I hope that we'll have bills to bring back to you, and then we'll have to fight the battle that every bill does with people once we come to some kind of understanding over the next year. And I appreciate all the interest that has happened and the people who've got involved in this along the way. And we hope we bring back something that all of those people can say, wow, that was good work. So thank you. Any thank other you. Comments or questions of our guest? Thank you very much.
Did we get our look forward to the work.
Just two bills left, so just carry those over.
So we need to carry over Senate Bill 1541 and Senate Bill 1566. Well, first I'll close the information hearing, and then we'll say Senate Bill 1541 and 1566 and their amendments to have all the paperwork for Wednesday. Need to have as many people as we can possibly have on Wednesday, since that's the last day that we can have anything in this committee. And I appreciate the work that we did today and all the people. So thank you very much. Yes.
Mr. Chair, just Senator Hass had something on the screen a while ago, and I think we're, as a Senate body, we have been negligent in some things, and I just wanted to, while we're still in open committee, to acknowledge the terrible loss with the passing of Glenn Frey. So for those who don't know, he was one of the founders and key players in a group called the Eagles, and it's part of our life. So,
and there is a great movie on
two-part documentary.
Oh, it's a great documentary
on Netflix or wherever it was. I saw it. What is it?
CNN had it.
Oh, CNN had it too. Pardon? Rock group, the Eagles.
The Eagles? You heard of the Eagles?
Yep.
And it was pretty awesome, so I would encourage people to look at it.
These young people, I don't know.
With that, we will please close the hearing for today, and thank you all. Thanks. That was that. Close the hearing for today, and thank you all. Thanks.